Candy Peterson, I wanted to begin by talking about how you have gone from teacher to teacher who's an activist and a blogger to candidate and to now vice president of the Washington Teachers Union. This has not been an easy transition. I wonder if you could talk about that.
Well, to start, I think I've always been an activist, outspoken person who challenged the status quo. And I started out in D.C. public schools, finding a lot of things that were wrong and trying to challenge, you know, and also have a voice at the table for teachers and school personnel. And that led me to become active in our teachers union. It, as a result of that, I represented school personnel and itinerant teachers who had often had no voice at the local school level. That morphed into, at some point in time, I'd say about 3 years ago, a blog, because there were things going on in the Washington Teachers Union that I was not in agreement with, in particular a contract, a proposal that we were looking at where it was going to strip teachers and school personnel of many of their rights. And so that was under Chancellor Ree. So I began writing about what was happening to spread the word so people would understand the kind of proposal that they would have to vote for, and they'd have as much information as possible. And the blog really kind of took off more than my expectation. And people were very responsive to reading it, and it led to writing stories about, in real time, about what was happening to teachers in the school system, including teachers writing some of the articles, often providing me leads on stories. And that's where we are today. It was, I would say, instrumental in helping our slate, the Saunders-Peterson slate, when we ran for WTU president and WTU general vice president. There was a lot of recognition due to the blog, because we brought a lot of the issues that teachers were facing. And we often talked about the former administration, who many people were dissatisfied with in our union. And here I am today, you know, as the general vice president. Who could have thought this would have happened? But I'm glad it did.
As I walked in today, I was remembering that there was a protest just outside this building not too long ago that you were a part of, and you've gone from standing outside the building protesting to now general vice president.
Correct. Well, we've been fighting on a number of fronts before we got here, particularly with the administration we have now, the Ree-Henderson administration. Of course, Chancellor Ree has moved on, and now we're looking at possibly a confirmation of Kaya Henderson as chancellor. We also had a lot of issues with the former union president, George Parker, who we believed was a dictator and not representative of our members' interests. And I was one of those members on the board of trustees for the union. And so I often picketed outside of this building and spoke on behalf of teachers, you know. So here we sit.
You mentioned that we have the Ree-Henderson administration. Chancellor Michelle Ree was the former school's chancellor. Kaya Henderson was her number two, and now is the, I guess, acting school's chancellor, has not been confirmed. I wanted to read a couple sentences from Valerie Strauss in the her column in the Washington Post. She wrote, "Henderson had signaled that she might be different, continuing, but increasingly Henderson sounds and acts like Ree in substance." That seems to be echoing what you laid out, which you're not seeing much of a difference between Henderson and former school's chancellor Michelle Ree.
Well, I don't believe that there is much of a difference. There may be a difference in terms of their style and presentation, in that Henderson is more pleasant on the surface, and not as caustic, if I can use that word. But I think they share the same ideology when it comes to school reform. They have very similar backgrounds. And of course, you have to keep in mind Henderson was number two in charge. So a lot of the reforms that Ree implemented, she signed off on. And she made decisions that certainly harmed our members. I remember about, I guess it was in 2008, Henderson was the administrator who signed off on probationary teachers being fired, basically at will, without regard to their performance. If a principal wanted to get rid of a probationary teacher, Henderson sent out an email saying, just click on this link and you can fire this person. And we have subsequently won that arbitration where 75 teachers, probationary teachers, who weren't even told what they had done or had did not have a chance to appeal the termination decision, we won an arbitration ruling. The Washington Teachers Union did. Of course, now the city is deciding to appeal that. But I think that's a big success. We believe we'll be ultimately successful, that they will not win at this appeal and that these teachers will eventually be reinstated with back pay.
Candy Peterson, what is school reform? Those words are said over and over again, and it was constantly said that's what Michelle Ree was all about, you know, was school reform, and that's what Kaya Henderson is all about. We read in the press, and later maybe we can talk about the Washington Post as well and their role in covering education. But how do you define school reform?
Well, I think school reform is a lot of things. It's trying to in conjunction with the educational stakeholders to improve academic achievement of our students. And of course, teachers and school personnel, community and parents have to be a part of that discussion on what do we need to do to improve the conditions, not only the learning conditions, but also, D.C. for a long time has been at the bottom rung in terms of achievement, student achievement. And we've jumped on a lot of bandwagons with a lot of different superintendents and most recently a chancellor. And every time we make a little bit of success, somebody comes in new and then we make more changes. But we've got to take a look at this one-size model doesn't fit all of our students. We're in an urban environment, and on one side of town, you have students who are more affluent, and their needs are not as great. And we have the same approach to education on the other side of town with students in Ward 8, where their needs are far greater, and that a good majority of their education is all within the school day. They don't have the supports they need. They don't have the resources. They're dealing with poverty, crime, and other things in their communities, which do have an impact on their ability to learn. It's not to suggest they can't learn, but I think reform has to include looking at that. What do we need to do for all of our students, not just those that do well, but those that are struggling? We've got to change this paradigm that we have and come up with a model that maybe it's a different model for those students that are struggling. So school reform is all of us.
Can you talk about the impact evaluations?
Well, about 3 years ago, Chancellor Ree, when she came in, she decided we needed an evaluation tool that would measure performance of not only teachers but all school personnel. And for teachers, this instrument, we believe, is a flawed tool. And basically, it's something that has been created. It's constantly being tweaked and changed, and teachers getting on-the-job training while they're being evaluated. There are just many problems with it. It also ties student achievement. I believe it's at the 50th percentile to teachers' evaluation scores. And we're looking at this year, the Washington Teachers Union is looking at about 700 plus teachers possibly being fired with impact. And we maintain that we want a tool that's fair and that accurately measures what a teacher's doing. Some of the variables that we're concerned about is when you look at teachers in wards where students are performing poorly, particularly in our poorer wards, the teachers' scores are lower. In wards where it's a higher socioeconomic status and the students come prepared and they have the resources, the family support, teachers do better. So there's a disparity there, and we're very concerned. And we believe that there are other models that could provide teachers, school personnel, more support, provide them the resources so that they can be effective, rather than this kind of revolving door approach to we train you, we rate you down, and then we fire you. And it looks like every year we're averaging very high numbers of teachers being fired under this instrument. And with the recent cheating scandal, it calls into question the validity of tying these test scores, to teacher performance. I think in some other states, it's much lower than 50%, obviously. But I think that we've got to keep challenging and saying, hey, look, there's some other instruments out there we believe that can get at the same result.
Can you talk about that recent scandal, I guess, where you saw erasure marks that were seen on test scores? I think the USA Today reported that there's a better chance of winning the Powerball than of these erasures marks being by accident or coincidence. Can you talk about this incident?
I think from years dating back to 2008 to 2010, again under the Ree Henderson administration, there were, it was called into question, and I think the former state superintendent of education, I'm blacking her name, Deborah Giss, had brought it to the attention of Chancellor Ree that there were very high erasure marks on our standardized tests here in D.C., and that there needed to be a more intensive investigation. And, of course, that really intensive investigation was not done. But Department of Education had an erasure study where the erasure marks during those years were very high. And it appeared that our school system, there were high incidents of cheating in quite a few schools. I think it was 96 schools in 2008, 40-some 2009, and 40-some in 2010. It took USA Today to really bring this story to light and give it the attention that it deserved, in saying that we had a number of schools here that got financial awards from the Department of Education because their schools made significant gains on these standardized tests. And now these are some of the same schools where, it's likely that they cheated. And it was only after all of this came to light through the media was the now Henderson administration willing to say, we need to have this investigated. It was after pressure. And I think that that's troublesome, that this administration sat by, knew this was going on 3 years ago, and did absolutely nothing. They had a cursory evaluation with interviewing some of the people that administered the tests and so forth, but nothing extensive where they could try to figure out what's going on so it could be addressed. And I think it did a disservice to the community, the parents, obviously students. It does a disservice to all of us if we look the other way. So I think it should be some type of federal investigation, as it was the case in Georgia, where I believe it was the governor at the time had called in the feds to take a look at incidents of cheating. And so it remains to be seen, what the outcome of this investigation under Henderson will reveal. But I think everybody's going to be watching.
It's interesting that the article was written by USA Today. and not the Washington Post, which covers education extensively right here in D.C. You had a recent protest outside the Washington Post. I wonder if you could talk about the Post's ownership of Kaplan, the education company, and what you think of the Post's education coverage.
Well, I think the Washington Teachers Union decided to protest at the Washington Post because we're concerned about the coverage. It's often inadequate. I think one blogger said that you can't get, if you can't look to the Post for adequate education coverage, where can you go? Right here in D.C. And so oftentimes the both sides of the story is are not told by the Post. They tell the story that they want you to believe. And the educational stakeholders, the community, the union, parents, teachers, their voice isn't heard. You know, letters to the editor often aren't published. Even when people try to get their viewpoints across, it's just not revealed. And we believe that some of the reporters there who were quite good, such as Bill Turk, in reporting news stories were kind of shut down from writing a lot of the education stories and relegated to a blog. There are concerns that have been raised about a great deal of their revenue comes from Kaplan Higher Education, is that a conflict of interest for them? And is that the reason that they promote this reform under Chancellor Rhee? So obviously they were a big supporter of hers. They often were very negative towards the Washington Teachers Union in particular, or anybody who stood up and challenged some of these reform efforts that she had that were controversial. So we started there. That was one of our first lines of attack by protesting there. We got about 300 people out, and we also had the support of a lot of other unions, community members, who were in agreement that we're going to stop buying the Post until they stop lying. And that's just one of a series of political pressures we plan to bring to get the attention about what's going on here in the city as it relates to education.
And you already said this at the beginning, but I just wanted to restate, if you would, this atmosphere about what gets covered and not covered regarding education in D.C., particularly by the Washington Post, is this is what gave rise to yours creating a blog to get some of this information out to folks.
I agree that the blogs oftentimes here in D.C. and probably across the country, but particularly here in D.C., lead the way in telling stories. A lot of the stories I told, it would have been wonderful if the Washington Post would have told the stories, the real stories about what goes on in our public schools, and that this media hype around Michelle Rhee and her reform effort, all of the things that were told weren't accurate. You hear part of the story. There was a lot of cover-up that went on. And so teachers and parents in particular want people to know what is the real story. Like, we're facing education cuts right now. And if you listen to Henderson, Kaya Henderson talk, we'll have class sizes of 22. But the reality is that's not true. We'll have class sizes, and we have class sizes now that are 35 and 40. And when you cut services to schools, particularly in education, then you cut services to students. And so blogs are always going to, I think, continue to be important to tell the I don't want to say underdog side, but the other side of the story, the student side, the parent side, the voice that nobody wants to report. So we've continued the Washington Teacher blog here and adopted it as the official blog of the Washington Teachers Union. But that's just one of a number of blogs. There are quite a few good blogs out there in D.C. that report on education. And I think sometimes they lead the stories for the Washington Post because of the pressure put on. The Washington Post sometimes will pick up these stories and get their tips right there. So
we're speaking at a time that following Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin's attacks on collective bargaining, and I noticed it dawned on me that a lot of the attacks on collective bargaining we saw here with Michelle Rhee and her time as school chancellor. The folks in Wisconsin have protested in massive numbers, but it somehow went a little bit under the radar a couple years ago as Rhee was doing it. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, I think when we started here, talking about when Rhee came in 3 years ago, I remember people calling me an alarmist because when I know that she came in and she was talking about taking back a lot of the rights from teachers under our union, people didn't really look beyond the current moment in time. And, you know, I think she enticed teachers and she enticed the former union president with dollar signs. And because in this city, teachers oftentimes go 4 and 5 years without getting a raise, many people were saying, well, wow, merit pay, this is great. All a six-figure salary, this is great. But looking beyond that, what did you have to give up in order to get that? Well, under that first contract proposal, you had to give up a whole lot. You had to give up your rights of seniority and tenure. And even the contract that was eventually ratified, there have been a lot of rights that people have had to give up. And that our union 40 years ago worked very hard to get. There was a time when teachers didn't have many rights and they could be easily fired. It's unfortunate that, hindsight is 20/20. But I think with what's happened in Wisconsin, people are clear of what's happening. It's not just an attack on teachers' unions. It's an attack on unions across the United States. It's an attack on, middle class. So that incident in Wisconsin has really opened up everyone's eyes. And I think here in our city, people are much more aware of what's going on. And that's how we're able to get, or we're building this momentum of people who wouldn't, under normal circumstances, are not necessarily activists, but are more people are coming to the forefront saying, hey, wait a minute, we can't just sit by and allow this to happen. So,
Candy Peterson, as you were campaigning very hard to become vice president of the Washington Teachers Union, along with Nathan Saunders, who became president, you're also campaigning for then-council chairman Vincent Gray, who has become mayor. You've described the Rhee Henderson administration as being one. Did you expect Mayor Gray to be different on these education issues, and how do you assess his time in office so far?
Well, I'm disappointed. I think a number of us, particularly in education, are disappointed. Teachers are disappointed, many of whom worked on his campaign. Our union is disappointed because Gray led us to believe that he shared a lot of the same ideology, and I know he's early in his term yet, but I'll start with one thing that he did. It was our understanding that when he came in, he would give us a choice in terms of a chancellor, that at least we would have the option of looking at more than one candidate for the next school chancellor, and that did not occur. Even though the Washington Teachers Union was there and had was supposed to have input, Gray made the decision to only allow one resume to be considered, and that was the resume of Kyer Henderson for school chancellor. So it appears to me that at least on that front, he was not a man of his word, because he indicated that he would follow the law, and that just did not happen. No one else was considered. It's concerning some of the things that we're seeing with the appeal of the 75 probationary teachers. He made the decision to not follow the arbitrator's ruling, and we believe that he would, not waste even more money and even more time when these teachers have obviously won and are due 2 years' worth of back pay. That was another disappointment. We've also made a proposal to Gray asking for him to at least have a dialogue with the Washington Teachers Union president about giving back the 5% raise to see if we could save teachers' jobs when these education cuts hit. at the end of the year, and rather than have the dialogue, Gray basically relegated a response by the acting chancellor, Kaya Henderson, and did not even, you know, speak with us, and basically said, thanks, but no thanks, we don't want your money, and, you know, we don't want to reopen negotiations. So people are concerned, we're concerned about what we're seeing. You know, we don't know what this will mean going forward, but we believe we'll bring the political pressure necessary to get his attention and to remind him that because of teachers, because of the support through the Washington Teachers Union and the community, he was elected. And we expect him to be a man of his word. And if he's not, then we will go after him with the same furor that we went after Fenty to get him unseated, if that need be the case.
Speaking of political pressure and elections, yesterday was a special election, and the candidate who the WTU endorsed, Vincent Orange, prevailed.
That's correct. There were two candidates that we endorsed. One was for the at-large city council seat, Vincent Orange. Our executive board voted to support his candidacy. And the second person was a young man by the name of Trayon White, who ran for the Ward 8 school board's seat for the State Board of Education to replace William Lockridge. Both of those candidates won, and we're quite pleased about that.
Thanks so much for your time, Candy Peterson. Anything else you want to add?
No, I just want to encourage people to stay tuned. We have some more political activities that will be forthcoming, and we welcome the support of the community, our parents, teachers, school personnel, and all activists and other unions as well, as we continue to try to bring pressure on this city to do what's right.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.